Thomas likes to say, you know, imagine the U.S. government trying to enslave freedom-loving Vermonters. Well, I don't know if you've watched the news for the past few years, but I can imagine that pretty easily, actually. Before Iraq, when there were vast protests against the war, we all thought that was going to make a difference. The fact that all of Western Europe was against the United States invading, we thought that was going to make a difference. The United States has reached a point where they don't really care what anyone else thinks anymore. So I don't think we can count on public opinion or NATO to save us if we actually got to the point of seceding. I think the U.S. government would be pretty brutal. So what is the answer to that problem? And that's a question I don't necessarily have an answer. My only answer that I've been able to come up with kind of follows on the long emergency idea, which Jim Kunstler talked about today. I don't see succession succeeding as long as you have a militarily powerful U.S. government in place. However, if we do get into a long emergency situation, then when Vermont became independent for the first time, as Kevin Graffinino talked about a bit today, the situation was the government couldn't deal with it. There wasn't much of a government to begin with. They were busy dealing with thousands of English troops in Canada. And, you know, Vermont basically declared themselves independent, and there's nobody around to tell them otherwise. And so that could well be the situation we get into in which Vermont becoming independent again makes perfect sense. So maybe we can talk about an important part of what I see the Second Vermont Republic and Vermont Commons doing is seeding those ideas out there and preparing the groundwork so that for when the situation changes, we're ready to come up with an option that's a lot more viable and palatable. The other question that man brought up, and that I've heard a lot in the time I've been involved with this movement, is the patriotism question. It really bothers people to talk about leaving the U.S. government. And the best answer I've heard to that is one that Frank Bryan talked about in his piece that he wrote for Vermont Commons, which is that he doesn't see us seceding from the United States that the founding fathers formed in the 1770s. He sees us seceding back to that. If you're a patriot, are you a patriot to what the United States is in 2005 or the ideals that the United States was founded with in the 1770s? You could argue that currently the U.S. government has a much closer similarity to the British government that we seceded from than it does to what our ideal is. So I think the way to answer the patriotism question is that the patriotic thing to do is to try to bring the country, or at least whatever part of the country we have any power over, back to what it was meant to be all along. Anyway, I just wanted to bring up those two ideas and make sure we keep in mind the fact that we have quite an uphill battle in terms of public opinion to fight. Thanks.
Rowan Jacobson, editor of the Vermont Commons, speaking at the first statewide convention to discuss Vermont secession, held October 28th in Montpelier. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, Free Radio Asheville, WZKW Kingsville, or WRFN Nashville.
The Second Vermont Republic is fortunate to have just brought on board our first executive director, and she's here to talk with us now. Her name is Jane Dwinnell.
Who here loves Vermont? Who thinks Vermont is a special place? How many of you actually live here? Now, I know some of you don't live here, but isn't everyone here a Vermonter at heart? Yes. And that's a good thing, right? So, not to like diss any of you, how many of you were actually like born here? No, New Hampshire does not count. Unless you were like Frank and conceived in Vermont. Who was conceived in Vermont? How many of you have ancestors that go back several generations? Glad to see all of you here. My heritage runs deep in this place, this city, and this building. I walked past here every day of my high school career, pausing more often than not to admire Ceres at the top of the Golden Dome. My ancestor, Dwight Dwinell, carved that very lovely statue, the symbol of our agricultural richness. And my great-grandfather sat in these chambers, elected in 1904 by the men who knew him well in Randolph. Farmer and grange leader, he was respected enough by the men in town that they nominated him in mid-August. He was elected in September, if only we could have elections like that now, and came to Montpelier weekly on the train, in between getting in the last of the hay and digging the potatoes, to serve in the legislative session that ran from October to the first part of December. He then served on the Board of Agriculture. His wife, Emma, who accompanied him sometimes to Montpelier, said this in a letter to her daughter, Mary, my grandmother, on December 6th, 1904. "This has been a pleasant day. It snowed a little last night, but not enough for sleighing. Have been to both morning and afternoon legislative sessions today. In the House, they had a spirited debate on women's suffrage and will tomorrow vote on it. I presume they will kill it." How right she was. As progressive and forward-thinking as we Vermonters are known to be, woman suffrage was just too much for the legislature in 1904. But today we bring forth a new and forward-thinking idea, secession. Funny thing is that I've been thinking about this for years. When I learned in grade school that Vermont had once been an independent republic, I thought, well, why not again? Why do we have to be a state? We could do perfectly well as our own country in relationship with our neighbors and other political bodies around the world. I guess I've always felt that I've lived in a foreign country. Whenever I have traveled and told people where I lived, it was Vermont, never the United States. My heart has leapt a beat every time I have come home, whether it was from Moscow or Boston or Montreal or London or Los Angeles. Vermont is home. Vermont is where my heart lies. Okay, so I'm not a constitutional expert. I'm not a political scientist, nor any other kind of academic. I do have a perfectly legitimate bachelor's degree in history from the University of Vermont. But what I do have is experience and a life lived well here on this hallowed ground. I've been a registered nurse, trained at UVM, working in three of our hospitals, helping to care for my father as he died in a fourth. I have been a small business owner and a small diversified farmer and a chaplain to the bereaved and the sick and the dying and a pastor to a small rural congregation. I've been a parent and a homeowner and a voter and an activist, and I have lived in 5 of our 14 counties. So what do I think? I think there are smart, capable, creative folks here in Vermont, and we could do better to serve the people who live here and the land that we live, work, learn, and walk upon. We need health care for everyone. We need an educational system that works for our children and that is not commanded upon from people who do not know what is best for us. We need a public transportation system that is accessible and affordable for all. We need an energy policy that helps us stay warm through our long winters. We need help for our small business owners and our family farmers. And I don't see any of this coming anytime soon from the federal government. I'm a strong believer in self-sufficiency and self-reliance. I think we could do better for ourselves. I think that by cutting the apron strings to Washington, that Vermont could provide better for our citizens and our precious land. My ancestors came here 7 generations ago. My father's side to Calais and my mother's side to Braintree. Those brave people wanted a new life, a better life. They wanted room to move, a place to create a home and a living. They were also looking for community and a new way to be in relation to their neighbors. What has changed in 230 years? Those intrepid people who founded the first Vermont Republic wanted this, and so do we. We seek community and a responsible and reliable living. We want clean air and water and food for our families. We want to have a voice in our civic affairs. We want to care for our elders and our sick. We want community and a reason to be. We're Vermonters, and for me, that's enough. Some people may worry about our currency and about Social Security and the UN and the terminology and what would we do about X, Y, and Z. You know, I don't know what we would do about any of it because it's not for me to say alone. I have ideas, and you have ideas. We will do this together. But what I do know is that there are many small successful countries around the world today, Switzerland, Iceland, the Netherlands, Denmark, just to name a few, who have figured it all out, and I trust that we can too. Because Vermonters are creative. Vermonters are reliable. Vermonters care about our land and our people. We don't know what the future will bring us. Nobody can know that. The best we can do is to work for the kind of future that we want. We can be the change we want to see. We can create new ways that work for all. We can secede. And we can succeed. We are Vermonters, after all. Smart, creative, caring, and reliable. What more do we need? Thank you.
Jane Blymore. Next is Dr. Rob Williams.
If I told you that Jane was a Unitarian minister, would you be surprised? That's the first time I've heard her speak, and I want to hear more. How many of you are secessionists? Raise your hand. Thank you. We're in good company. I want to pick up on something that Frank Bryan said this morning about ambiguity. He talked about living with ambiguity. And I think that's something that all of us have to do. I am a patriot, and I am a secessionist. As were the founding fathers and mothers in 1776, who gave us the Declaration of Independence, which is, make no mistake, a secessionist document. Read it closely. If you haven't read it in a while, bust it out. It's a secessionist document. Thomas Jefferson, Abigail Adams, Molly Pitcher, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, James Madison, all of them were secessionists. And let's not forget that. The richest, most powerful empire in 1776 was not us, not the U.S., not the United States, it was the British Empire. And the Declaration of Independence was our forefathers' and our foremothers' gift to the world. And it is a secessionist document. I was born in Pennsylvania. I feel I have to declare my allegiances here real quick. I was born in Pennsylvania. I grew up a Yorker. Where's Kirk? There's Kirk. About 30 minutes from where Kirkpatrick Sale lives now, in the Hudson River Valley. I married a Bostonian. I've traveled all over this great continent, and I can tell you that I love this country. I've lived in Hawaii, I've lived in Boston, I've lived in New Mexico. I love this country. Having studied the history of the United States, having paddled its rivers, having hiked its mountains, having traveled its roads and highways, having met and fallen in love with and married a good woman, that Bostonian, having raised 2 children or starting the process, 1 is 6 and 1 is 3, having voted in every election since I've been able to vote, having held political office in my town on the school board, an elected position, which I still hold, I can say with confidence that I love the United States. But the federal government and the leaders in the military-industrial complex and all of us, make no mistake, in a democratic republic, we are all implicated. But they have led us down a path of empire. This is what history tells us. They've led us down a path of empire, and it's been a long and wild 100-plus year ride. And now, here we are in 2005, and we have to deal with the consequences of that last 100 years. Here's what keeps me awake at night, and maybe it keeps you awake at night as well. What keeps me awake at night is a corporate, commercial, media, and news culture that is really good at spectacle and really hard at being honest with us about our current situation. And I was pleased to hear Frank mention this morning. What keeps me up at night is the global military-industrial complex, of which the United States is the driving engine, the U.S. government. We are the number one arms dealer in the world. The federal government. What keeps me up at night is looking into the eyes of my college students, those who serve in the National Guard here in Vermont, who have been forcibly conscripted to go off to foreign lands and fight at the request of our U.S. government, even though there is much debate about whether or not that was the intention of the Guard initially. What keeps me up late at night is a two-party system at the national level, the Republicans, the Democrats, call them what you will, which is broken. We've heard about that today. What keeps me up late at night is the stupendous corruption that all of us have to sort of wrestle with as citizens of this country. Enron, Halliburton, Adelphia, these are all just the tip of the iceberg. The U.S. Treasury right now behind our backs is being systematically looted. That's our money, our future. What keeps me up late at night, of course, as I know talking with many of you, are the so-called elections of 2000 and 2004. The government, the U.S. government's own General Accounting Office this week released a report saying that the 2004 elections, and it's, let's use the term loosely, please, were deeply flawed. What keeps me up late at night, of course, is the truth about what happened on 9/11. And for those of you who still cry conspiracy theory, I urge you, with my history hat on, I've been trained to look at evidence, and so have many of my colleagues. Take a good, hard look at the evidence. That's all I ask. Take a good, hard look at the evidence before you dismiss that alternative hypothesis. But what we have here on the balance sheet, on the hopeful side, what we have here is a very powerful concept. The policy option of last resort, no doubt, but a powerful concept nonetheless, and that is the concept of secession. As Thomas just said, where are you, Thomas? As Thomas just said, secession is legal. Secession is lawful. Secession is constitutional. Secession was part and parcel of the political dialogue in this country for the first 70 years of the Republic's existence, and we need to bring it back. We need to bring it back. Secession is also, as Donald Livingston tells us in the lead article of the Vermont Commons in November of this issue, secession is a uniquely American invention. And not only that, it is uniquely New England. We tend to associate secession with the South because of that four-year bloodbath that was the Civil War from 1861 to 1865. But understand that New Englanders looked hard at seceding from the Union no less than six times in the years leading up to the Civil War, from 1790 thereabouts all the way up to 1860, secession was on the table as an option here in New England. So we have to take the notion of secession seriously. Not too seriously, of course, which is why we have our actors and our playwrights and our puppeteers to remind us, as Rick Foley reminds me, hi Rick, to be playful. Ask the question, the secession question, and let's be playful asking the question. But let's be serious as well, and let's be reflective. I want to end with a story out of the books. In 1774, there was a well-known Virginian who confided to his journal that he was sure, despite the empire's flaws, that he would remain a loyal subject to the empire, the British Empire, because he felt that the empire offered the best hope going forward. The next year, 1775, he changed his mind, got on his horse, picked up his weapons and commanded the Continental Army against the British Empire and their hired German mercenaries, the Hessians. His portrait stands behind me. His name was George Washington. His name was George Washington. I have no wish to bear arms against the U.S. government as a secessionist, and I know many of my colleagues feel the same way. I think perhaps we can look to other currents in the American political tradition, that current so well articulated by Henry David Thoreau and others like him, the tradition of nonviolent resistance. I think that offers us a blueprint, perhaps. Can an entire state exercise nonviolent resistance? Well, consider this. The American Revolution was won by 25% of the colonial population. 25% of the colonial population. We don't need everybody to agree with us. What we need is a core group of committed people and organizations to work together peaceably, thoughtfully, deliberately, with love, as Frank Bryan said, and patience, and no small measure of remorse, to extricate ourselves and hopefully encourage others to do the same from the situation we find ourselves in. So I say this, long live the disunited states. Long live the once and what may be the future Vermont Republic. Thank you.
Rob Williams of Vermont Commons. Thomas Naylor.
Okay, our last speaker is Kirkpatrick Sale. He's going to talk to us about another spin-off activity of the Second Vermont Republic that came from our conference a year ago in November in Middlebury. Kirkpatrick Sale is one of the three great decentralist writers of the 20th century, following in the tradition of Leopold Kohr, who wrote Breakdown of Nations in the mid-1950s, Fritz Schumacher, Small is Beautiful, and Kirkpatrick, although he's written 14 books, certainly the book most relevant to our convention today is his classic book in the early 80s called Human Scale. Kirkpatrick is a very strong will individual, passionate in what he believes in. He writes for The Nation magazines and many other places. He was a founding director of the Shoemaker Society. He is going to, and he's, editor at large of Vermont Commons and many other things. He's going to share with his thoughts on the Middlebury Institute, which is essentially taking many of the ideas of the Second Vermont Republic and going national with them. We realize that if we're going to succeed, if we're the only state doing that, which we're not, there are at least 25 others who've got independence movements, that the more company we've got, and so the Middlebury Institute is really aimed at raising the level of awareness of independence, separatism, secession on the radar screen nationally. It's a great pleasure to welcome Kirkpatrick.
Thank you, Thomas. Good afternoon. It's been a long day, and you have exhibited considerable Sitzfleisch, as we say in Yiddish, and you are to be applauded for that. So I will not be long. It has been well and truly said that an effective speech should last no longer than the time an average man makes love. So in conclusion... No. Let's pretend we're not talking about the average man. Let's talk about that we're talking about Vermonters making love, and that will give me a few more minutes so that I can tell you about the Middlebury Institute. This is a think tank devoted to the study of separatism, secession, and self-determination, born out of a radical consultation that we had in Middlebury a year ago. And at present, it exists in Cold Spring, New York, which, not incidentally, is my home. But that's because Middlebury Institute is an idea, a vision, and it can locate anywhere, not necessarily in Middlebury, Vermont. Although, in truth, I would hope that eventually we could have an office in an actual building in Middlebury for the Institute. But that idea, that vision of the Institute, is essentially to make separatism a political reality and put secession on the national agenda, encouraging and supporting secessionist movements and working toward the eventual dissolution of the American empire. I've been staring at the slogan up there, which we would argue is essentially contradictory. The more unity you have, the less freedom you have. We have unity in this nation, and the Vermont National Guard was not free to stay home and tend to its affairs, nor any of the other National Guards. It is essentially contradictory. That's what we would feel, that it is disunity that allows freedom. But in a word, the Middlebury Institute exists to make secession in this country real. And we do that by showing that, as Thomas was alluding to, it is legally feasible, economically viable, politically possible, and eminently desirable. Legally feasible because the Constitution, as Thomas has suggested, which says nothing about secession, reserves powers not in the nation, to the states and the people. And that power would certainly include secession. In addition, when the Confederate states were seceding in the 19th century, which was, by the way, not a civil war. Civil wars are characteristically those wars where part of the state tries to take over the government from another group of people. And that's not what happened at all. It was a war of secession. They had no interest in taking over Washington. It was a war of secession. But Congress at that time considered several amendments that would forbid secession, arguing that, of course, it had not been forbidden to that moment. Moreover, any people anywhere, and I'm quoting now, any people anywhere being inclined and having the power have the right to rise up and shake off the existing government and form a new one that serves them better. This is a most valuable, a most sacred right. So said Abraham Lincoln in 1848. Would that he had said it 13 years later. But he knew then that it is a most valuable, a most sacred right. Secondly, it is economically viable because nearly every state in this union, certainly every region, has land sufficiently richly endowed to provide for basic necessities. And a secessionist state would be work to increase its self-sufficiency through careful development of the existing resources, instead of letting them be exploited by outside forces. So the wealth remains within the state. And besides, it would no longer have to pay the federal government income taxes, gasoline taxes, telephone, all the other taxes that we now pay to the federal government. And that money stays at home. The money that we spend on supporting federal bases and federal office buildings no longer have to be. That money stays at home. Right now, 17 states pay far more to the federal government than they get back. Obviously, that would change if they were independent. And another 25 get only negligibly more back than that they pay out. Moreover, a secessionist state doesn't cut itself off from the rest of the world. It can still trade as it does at the moment for what necessities it could not produce for itself. Three, this is politically possible because, as James Kunstler convincingly told us this morning, the crises around peak oil and the end of the gasoline economy and the disruptions, he did not mention this morning, but it's in his book, the disruptions caused by the alarming increase of global warming, significant disruptions to our economy and our society, will require greater dependency on local communities, bioregions, and coherent states. I've been told that secession is no remedy because global warming will have effects that cross all boundaries. But the fact is that an independent state is far more able to come up with means of dealing with these consequences of global warming because it could confront them on a local and doable level. And if anybody thinks that a comprehension of the problems from global warming, much less the solutions, is going to come at the national level, they're living in a cloud cuckoo land whose capital is Crawford, Texas. We will not look there for solutions to this problem. And if secession becomes not just in Vermont but elsewhere, simply a necessary way for certain populations to survive in the long emergency, there's no federal government that will be able to stop it. And there might not even be any federal government. And finally, four, secession is eminently desirable because, as has become increasingly evident in the last 4 years, but was evident even before that, certainly for the last 20 years, but in the last 4 years, it is intolerable for a citizen to succumb to a government that is opposed to the Geneva Convention, the International Criminal Court, international law, the UN, test ban treaties, the Kyoto Treaty, budget control, civil rights, social security, an independent judiciary, opposed to homosexuality and gay marriage, condoms, abortion, Plan B pills, medical marijuana, stem cell research, evolution, and all of science, gun control, democratic elections, clean air and water, conservation and alternative energy, endangered species, and a free and democratic republic with the right of secession. Intolerable. And it is in favor of unjust and unjustifiable warfare, brutal torture in defiance of all conventions, illegal detentions, the fostering of terrorism, war profiteering, sky-high trade deficits, cronies and corporate insiders in high office, weak and incompetent federal agencies, in favor of the Patriot Act infringements, illegal surveillance, tax cuts for the rich, corporate control of elections, lawmaking by lobbyists, political and corporate corruption, government secrecy and unaccountability, in favor of global warming, acid rain, smokestack pollution, creationism, born-again evangelicalism, imminent Armageddon and rapture, and a deceitful and dangerous neocon commitment to global hegemony. It is intolerable, I say to you, intolerable for a citizen to live under such a government in such a country. That is not a country I want to live in. That is a country, incidentally, that I find very hard to think of loving. I don't want to live in that country. But I have no intention of going to Canada or France. I love my home. And I want to leave this country without leaving my home. And the only way to do that is secession. That's why it's possible and necessary. I know that even now some of you may have doubts about whether such a course can succeed here and elsewhere in the nation. So I want to conclude with a favorite story of mine for doubters and naysayers about how things can work out when they seem most impossible if we are but willing to use our imaginations and a little common sense. A story about a man in a far-off tribe who had 17 horses, which he left to his sons in his will, with the proviso that the eldest son get half of them, the next son one-third of them, and the youngest son a ninth of them. Well, this was a great puzzlement to the sons because they had 17 horses. And it was impossible to divide 17 horses that way. So, in puzzlement, they went to the wise old village elder, an old wisdom known for her intelligence in all matters. Hearing their predicament, she thought a bit, and she said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you one of my horses, and then you'll have 18 horses. Now, then the rest is easy. Half of 18 is 9 for the eldest. A third of 18 is 6 for the next son. And a ninth of 18 is 2 for the youngest son. Now, let's see. Then you'll have 9 plus 6, which is 15, plus 2, which is 17. And you'll have an extra horse, and you can give me my horse back." The Middlebury Institute, I am here to say to you, will be that wise old village elder. Thank you very much.
Kirkpatrick Sale, author of many books, including Human Scale and Rebels Against the Future, speaking at the Convention on Vermont Secession on October 28th.
I would be happy to take a few questions.
Someone asked whether violence would be involved in secession.
I have no idea. So far, this Second Vermont Republic has repeatedly said that it wants a nonviolent and peaceful dissolution. And I assume that that would continue to be the feeling of the general public of this state. But I have no idea what they might come to. And someone spoke today about a few rifles and shotguns around the state. you would never know. But I think I agree basically with Thomas that it would be politically impossible in the eyes of this country and in the eyes of the world for a federal government to send in tanks to an independent Vermont that had freely voted to be independent. I do not think that such a move would have any support. Yes, sir.
Yes, I think we've pretty well put to rest the ridiculous statistic that we pay a dollar and get back $1.14. But just in case anybody doesn't quite understand what a rotten deal that is, it's sort of like paying somebody to hit you over the head with a stick and saying, "Well, that's what you paid me to do." To wit, the USDA stealing 2 flocks of perfectly healthy sheep from Vermonters, thereby killing a way of life. The HAVA, the Help America Vote Act, paying guards to keep us out of our own parking lots in Montpelier. The Real ID, the Patriot Act, and the deployment of the National Guard, that counts in the $1.14. So you are paying people to hit you over the head with a stick. So that $1.14 is crap. It doesn't mean anything. So can we stop saying the $1.14? Thank you. I hope you can back me up on that.
It's even more elaborate than that, because the national policies that have existed for anyway the last 50 years, particularly involved with agriculture, have put great prices upon the Vermont farmers, the farmers everywhere, great added expenses. And in fact, in all sectors, including now education, it is federal regulations that place a great burden, financial burden, on local people, all of which would be done away with if there was secession. One final question.
Yeah, I was just curious. And on the Middlebury Institute, announcement, I guess you mentioned that the kind of one of the purposes is to study the the legal tactics that would be used to prevent the secession of a state. I was wondering if you could I don't know how much you've gone into it, but I was wondering if you could outline, what the legal what the kind of legal standing of secession is.
I thought I had done that. I explained that it's in the Constitution. In effect, it's in the Constitution. Let me just answer you by saying that there is a dispute among legal scholars. Some say that it is illegal, some say that it is not. But even that will tell you that there is standing for the idea that it is legal and could be, therefore, brought to any court, including a Supreme Court, which could reasonably find that it is legal. But in any case, the seceding state would be able to make the case that it is legal, and that would be its moral foundation for separation. So, with that, I encourage you all to sign up to our institute, and if you have papers, ideas that you would like to me to consider and then send out to our mailing lists, you are welcome to do that, and aid us in any way possible, not excluding checks. And I hope you will join us. Thank you very much.
Here's Thomas Naylor again.
A tough act to follow. To wrap things up, we would like to restate the two propositions, the two resolutions that I read early in the day, really by way of answering the question of we've met together for the last few hours, the first statewide convention on secession since 1861. And someone might say, well, so what? What did they accomplish? And our proposed answer to you is to invite your consideration, your support, your vote for the two resolutions. We'll reread the first of them, and perhaps we can consider them one at a time. The first was the Vermont Independence Resolution, and they're circulating around if you didn't pick up a copy. Be it resolved that the state of Vermont peacefully and democratically free itself from the United States of America and return to its status as an independent republic as it was between January 15, 1777 and March 4, 1791. Does anyone care to move the adoption of that resolution? It's been moved and seconded.
Discussion. Is there discussion?
Yes. I just mentioned my name again, Peter Moss, because I hope you will vote for me. I'll be on the ballot next November. Now, I was very hopeful, as I had indicated before, that we would have the results of an opinion survey discussed last time. But there has
been.
We're
counting on you to give us the 50,000, Peter.
No, I didn't.
I said we're counting on it.
Yeah, well, I don't have it.
Next time.
Well, the point being that there is a lot of dissatisfaction, and it's not all directed to George Bush and his cast of characters. And my concern is that a lot of effort and goodwill has been invested in this enterprise, but it has not, as far as I can tell, spread to the hustings. And so even if we pass the resolution, will the most important people, namely the 300,000 voters of Vermont, support it? And if not, how can we salvage the goodwill, the effort, and the ideas? And I want to introduce a thought, whether it's welcome or not, and that is, if and when an opinion survey will be conducted, it should not simply ask, do you support secession or independence? Because it is my feeling, absent the results of this not yet conducted poll, that the majority would not, far from two-thirds or three-quarters, per se, because they are not as riled as we are about bullshit. That's a new word. It used to be bullshit. But now I dropped the L to attribute it to who you think will sell you the idea. The Ottawa Journal of Globe Mail the other day was saying most Americans are not much concerned about Iraq and everything going with it. They put the yellow ribbon on the car, the magnetic yellow ribbon, and let it go at that. I know Mr. Morisseau and I are advocating impeachment, and it has gone nowhere. I had a letter in the Vermont Guardian, no support. So what I'm saying is if an opinion survey is conducted, it should be structured in such a way, and you may not at first blush support this. Would you support secession or independence if single-payer health care came with it? If all the conservative shibboleths on which the elections are based were thereby removed, and other such possible offers to justify full public support for secession. Thank you.
Other discussion? Yes.
Hello, is this on?
Yes.
My name's Adam Damon. I'm from the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont. My family's been living up there in southern parts of Canada on the border of Vermont for over 300 years. Okay, so you've been in Vermont for 10 years, but does that make you a Vermonter? We seceded. I'm sorry. We joined America for a reason, and I feel that it's kind of like a marriage. We can't separate that. It's just a reflection of society demoralization. Our seceding from America shows that we've lost faith. And we joined this institution because we believed it was something that was good. And it still is good. We have to change it. We're all just sitting in this room, a lot of laughs going around, a good time. But is anybody really thinking of going out and doing something about it? It doesn't seem to me like there is anyone in this room that's willing to do that. I'm for Vermont being its own country because I don't really give a damn about the United States so much. I'm for, you know, having my nice little farm, helping my neighbors out. That's what my family's been based on for a very long time. Yeah, so that'll have it.
Thank you.
I left Texas and went to Arizona and then California. I've been the last 10 years in Moab, Utah. But I got along in those areas rather swimmingly, although I will say that I had a lot of problems with the state of Texas in a large part when I was growing up, and especially after Ann Richards was defeated. But I take exception with most of your comments in that vein. I understand your family's been here a long time. Mine's been in Texas, and they have some of the same narrow-minded ideas that you just espoused to people that come in. I think they're divisive, and I would welcome dialoguing with you sidebar about this. Maybe we come to an understanding. I think you've got a fine state, and I appreciate the heritage of your family. And I'm with you, not again you, as they used to say.
Yes, in response to the person who said that they've been in, their family's been in Vermont for a long time, and sort of putting down newcomers or relative newcomers, I would just like to say I'm very seriously committed to the Second Vermont Republic, and I have family roots here in Vermont going back over 200 years, and roots in New England going back to Plymouth Plantation almost 400 years ago.
Hi, my name's Jenna, and we seem to be the Texas block here. We both moved up here from Texas this summer, from Dallas, because we did not want to be in that situation anymore. We did not want to be living that kind of life. It is not sustainable. It is a program for the future which is destined to fail and to create even more suffering around the world in addition to what we've already created. We came here to contribute. We came here to live a simple life, a human life. I could say, well, you know, my grandfather moved down from Quebec. He was Quebecois, and he moved to the United States. It doesn't make me any more legitimate than anybody else. It's been pointed out and needs to be pointed out again that we're all newcomers unless we're Abenaki, and we don't have any room to be putting other people down. I think this is a wonderful gathering. I think this is a wonderful conversation. I wish it all the success in the world, but I have to say that this is a movement that has to be based on inclusion and respect. Respect for all points of view, respect for all peoples and the earth. And if we don't have principles, then we'll get what we put out, and we don't need any more nativism, chauvinism, hierarchism, you know, power and ego. Thanks.
Excellent. Question's been called. All in favor of the motion, let it be known by standing. I think it's safe to say the motion carries. The second motion is the UNPO resolution. Which I'll reread. Whereas the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, the UNPO, an international membership organization located in The Hague, is dedicated to nonviolence, human rights, self-determination, and democracy, environmental protection, and tolerance, be it resolved that the Second Vermont Republic apply for membership in the UNPO as soon as possible. Those who might not have heard me read that this morning, I indicated that some of the members of the organization, it's a list of, you know, 100 or so, many of whom I am unfamiliar with, but the ones I am familiar with are the Lakota Indians, the Hawaiian indigenous people, the Hungarian minority in Romania, Taiwan, Tibet, and the Australian Aboriginals. Would anyone care to move the adoption of that resolution?
So moved.
It's been moved. Is there a second?
We don't have enough time for the debate on that resolution, but it also passed by a smaller margin. You've been listening to excerpts from the first annual statewide convention on Vermont secession in Montpelier, convened by the Second Vermont Republic, their website, vermontrepublic.org. I thought I'd conclude the program by reading from the Middlebury Declaration of November 7, 2004 that has been referred to frequently in the program. They wrote, "We gathered here this weekend to explore the possibilities of a new politics that might provide a realistic and enactable alternative to the familiar, sorry political scene around us that has just ratified its decadent and corrupt nature with the re-election of George W. Bush. We are convinced that the American empire, now imposing its military might on 153 countries around the world, is as fragile as empires historically tend to be, and that it might well implode upon itself in the near future. Before that happens, no matter what shape the United States may take, we believe there is at this moment an opportunity to push through new political ideas and projects that will offer true popular participation and genuine democracy. The time to prepare for that is now. In our deliberations, we considered many kinds of strategies for a new politics and eventually decided upon the inauguration of a campaign to monitor, study, promote, and develop agencies of separatism. By separatism, we mean all the forms by which small political bodies, dedicated to the precept of human scale, distance themselves from larger ones, as in decentralization, dissolution, disunion, division, devolution, or secession, creating small and independent bodies that rule themselves. Of course, we favor such polities that operate with participatory democracy and egalitarian justice, which are attainable only at a small scale. But the primary principle is that these states should enact their separation and self-government as they see fit. It is important to realize the separatist independence movement is the most important and widespread political force in the world today and has been for the last half century, during which time the United Nations, for example, has grown from 51 nations in 1945 to 153 nations in 2004. The breakup of the Soviet Union and the former Yugoslavia are recent manifestations of this fundamental trend, and there are separatist movements in more than 24 countries at this time, including such well-known ones as in Catalonia, Scotland, Lapland, Sardinia, Sicily, Sudan, Congo, Kashmir, Chechnya, Kurdistan, Quebec, British Columbia, Mexico, and the Indian nations of North America. There is no reason that we cannot begin to examine the processes of secession in the United States. There are already 28 separatist organizations in this country. The most active seem to be in Alaska, Cascadia, Texas, Hawaii, Vermont, Puerto Rico, and the South. And there seems to be a growing sentiment that because the national government has shown itself to be clumsy, unresponsive, and unaccountable in so many ways, power should be concentrated at lower levels. Whether these levels should be the states or coherent regions within states or something smaller still is a matter best left to the people active in devolution. But the principle of secession must be established as valid and legitimate. To this end, therefore, we are pledged to create a movement that will place secession on the national agenda, encourage nonviolent secessionist organizations throughout the country, develop communication among existing and future secessionist groups, and create a body of scholarship to examine and promote the ideas and principles of secessionism. Whenever any form of government is destructive to these ends, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government in such forms as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. The United States Declaration of Independence, 1776, that the Middlebury Declaration of November 7, 2004. Thomas Naylor referred to the United States government as having lost its moral authority, but I would suggest that it had no moral authority to begin with. This was a nation founded on genocide against the native people of these lands, and the making of treaties with them and repeatedly breaking them to dispossess them of those lands. It was founded on the kidnapping and enslaving of people from Africa in order to build the wealth of this nation, and continuing to torment the descendants of these people with a philosophy of racism that justifies avoiding making the reparations due their descendants. Those high-flying words in the Declaration of Independence, no matter how beautiful they sound, were written by a slave master and thus a hypocrite, who could have freed his slaves, but instead preferred to profit by their labor, and he was one of the best of them. This nation's rhetoric about itself is riddled with hypocrisy, and thus it must vigorously and repeatedly propagandize to its own people the mantra of its goodness. It alone among nations is obsessed by what is American and what is un-American, because on some level it is hollow, and a puff of truth is a threat to this delusional consensus. Yes, it is intolerable, and in my opinion, any secessionist movement that is in good faith will make good the broken promises to the Native Americans and finally deliver the 40 acres and a mule to the descendants of the Africans upon whose back the empire was built. This expiation is essential for all of us. America has this original sin, and the sins of the fathers have been visited on the whole project. It has created a nation addicted to violence and the sublimated forms of violence, competition, acquisition, and exploitation. You can download an MP3 of this and other episodes of Unwelcome Guests at our website, unwelcomeguests.org. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. Thank you for listening.